Right now, we've got 1001 songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, and what is unfortunately going to have to be the last show for a few weeks due to certain other commitments that I have going about my world of Seth Tetley Jones at the moment, that I'm going to have to take a brief sabbatical from Toby Creswell, the author of this, who of course was wrote for the Rolling Stone during the 1980s and then during the noughties. I can't remember what he was doing during the 90s, but during the noughties he went turned his hand to writing books such as this one, 1001 Songs, a book of 1001 songs. There's no canon, there's no one... There's no 1001. He wasn't even sure if these really were the best 1001 songs of all time, but he thought that they would enrich your taste and broaden your palate, so I guess that's a fair enough reason to compile them into a book. And considering the amount of writing blurbology that he put into them, it is quite apparent to me that he's justified in writing such a thing. Now, the first song that we have for you this week is The Jam with In the City. They were the junior partners of the British punk invasion, where the Sex Pistols and The Clash demanded the abolition of the class system, the destruction of rock superstars. Paul Weller's band Jam were more nostalgic. They were mod suits and aped the sounds of swinging London, albeit with a tough punk attitude. Like all bands of the era, the Jam started out with a manifesto. Because Weller, then still a teenager, was the sole composing force behind the Jam, their songs, right from the start, tended towards the personal. The first single was really about shaking off their lower middle class suburbia and getting amongst the action. It was originally called In the City, There's a Thousand Things That I Want to Say to You. London, where it was all happening, said Weller. Life seemed to be there and so removed from sleepy Woking. And that was the feeling that we were trying to capture. And the song is fast and furious, and based as it is around the Who-ish bass line from Bruce Foxton and the explosive drums from Rick Buckler. This had the amphetamine energy of the mod era. The whole first album was made in 100 hours. Like most of Weller's material at the time, it was tied to this notion of a dynamic youth wanting to grasp the future with both hands and shake it. This is The Jam with In the City.
Idea. And if a town walker is a stereotype,
That was The Jam with In the City here on 1001 Songs on Waiheke Radio. Next up, we've got the Go-Betweens with Love Goes On. And it appears on their album, 16 Lovers Lane, which Toby Creswell says was the Go-Betweens' finest hour and remains one of their finest albums of all time. It is the perfect sound of being in love. The opening salvo, Love Goes On, note the exclamation mark on the end. So a bit of, yeah, Love Goes On exclamation mark is the actual title there, just so you know. And it's definitely got an exclamation mark on the end. No, Love Goes On. It's Love Goes On! Or Love Goes On exclamation mark. The opening salvo, oh, I read that bit. The group had returned to Australia in the summer of 1987. Half a decade of struggle they had found, after which they had found a level of acceptance around the world that coincided with their personal maturity. Without being too pretentious, the summer was very important to the record. It was a brilliant summer. CA Grant McLennan told journalist John O'Donnell. After years of gloom, which is what it seems like when you live in England, to come back to brilliance, to shadow and contrast, that really helped us. It helped me very much spiritually and creatively. The group's acoustic guitars and violin beamed with sunshine. The track gallops along, powering the radiant melody. And this is the Go-Betweens with Love Goes On! Exclamation mark.
There's a cat in my alleyway, dreaming of birds that are blue. Sometimes girl, when I'm lonely, this is how I think about you. There are times that I want you, I want you so much I could bust. I know a thing about lovers, lovers lie down in trust. Don't feel any shame. Late at night when the light's down low, the candle burns to the end. I know a thing about darkness. Darkness ain't my friend.
The Go-Betweens there with Love Goes On! Exclamation mark here on 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. Also streaming online at www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Now, up next, we've got the Triffids with Wide Open Road, and this is from 1986, and it's from their album Born Sandy Devotional. Now, the Triffids were already old hands by the time they cut Born Sandy Devotional in London in 1985. The group had begun as teenagers in Perth, high on New York punk rock and Perth's own victims. Principal songwriter David McComb was kind of literary, with a knack for writing sublime pop tunes, but he also liked dirty rock and roll. McComb was a fervent admirer of Nick Cave. His modesty wouldn't permit him the realization that he ploughed the same field as Cave, but with far greater gifts. Perhaps coming from Perth, it's not surprising that distance in deserts, both physical and emotional, played a big part in McComb's writing. Their first album, Treeless Plain, is a magnificent, muscular piece of work that pounds out simple, powerful rock songs, one of the very best indie rock albums of its day. Born Sandy Devotional is a leap ahead of that album. The Triffids left Australia behind for Life on the Breadline in the London squats. This album reeks of that sense of distance. How much longer will it be devastating our friends, leaving our friends behind in Australia? I don't know where the devastating came from. How much longer will we be leaving behind our friends in Australia? McComb said to me once. To me, that's to Toby Cresswell. He often generally subtly drops in that, you know, some artist said something to him specifically. But personally, I've never actually met David McComb, so he never said anything to me ever. I haven't interviewed him or anything. But Toby Cresswell did, and when Toby Cresswell did so, David McComb said to him, "There is such polarity in my personal and professional lives. It all gets very forced in." Nowhere is this more apparent than in the song Tender is the Night, which Toby Cresswell hasn't even listed in this book, despite mentioning it here, which tells the story of a man who was emotionally torn apart to his core by ambition, and which also touches on what is lost when you travel across the planet. It's a chilling waltz. The album is full of places. The grit of the Nullarbor desert sand gets in your eyes, and you can almost taste the Indian Ocean. These songs exist in their little hermetically sealed world. David McComb's fables are wrapped in the heavenly melodic support of Graham Nee on the pedal steel guitar, Rob McComb on the violin, and especially the delicate bass lines of Marcin Casey. After some months, the Triffids established themselves in London and made the cover of the NME. There were great expectations for this album. Young producer Jill Norton, who shortly afterwards recorded the Pixies, brought a lush sound to the group without losing their idiosyncratic dynamic. The group sessions were jeopardized when the money ran out, and the album was finished by maxing out a credit card. You can feel the urgency. Lack of cash meets vaulting ambition. As critic Clinton Walker said, the Triffids brought a new bent, a dry, indigenous light and air to rock and roll. And this, as we have for you now, is the Triffids with Wide Open Road.
It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. It's wide open road. And now
Triffids with Wide Open Road here on 1001 Songs with me, your host, Seth Titley-Jones. We've got Garland Jeffries with Wild in the Streets. Garland Jeffries' first notable contact with the world of rock was the friendship he struck up with Lou Reed while they were both at Syracuse University in the 1960s. Here he appeared on John Cale's first album, Vintage Violence, but made little impact until one single, Wild in the Streets, was a minor radio hit in 1973. The song has a beautiful slashing Stones feel, with big open chords set against the insistent drum beat, a massive backbeat that pulses behind a song about social breakdown and the abandonment of kids by a cold-hearted society. The song appears to reference the 60s exploitation movie of the same name where goofy college kids take over America. Only in Jeffrey's version, it was not the idle rich but the kids in the ghettos who were breaking out. Mostly, though, the song resides with the vitriol of the riff that drives it like a battle anthem. And this is Garland Jeffries with Wild in the Streets.
Street, start to my car, running wild in the street.
Garland Jeffries there with Wild in the Streets here on 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as presented by me, your host, Seth Tetley Jones, and selected by that Australian music journalist, Toby Cresswell. Coming up next on 1001 Songs, we've got ZZ Top with LaGrange. Or maybe it's LaGrange. I don't actually know. I didn't listen to the song carefully enough, so it seems to have picked that up. But however, having said that, it's either LaGrange or LaGrange. I think I will call it LaGrange, simply because that word sounds slightly like grunge. Not that ZZ Top are grunge, but however, I quite like the reference anyway. Billy Gibbons grew up as the son of an orchestral conductor in Houston, Texas. His first band, the Moving Sidewalks, were a psychedelic garage band in the footsteps of the 13th floor elevators. His big teenage moment came when the Sidewalks opened for Jimi Hendrix, who praised his playing, gave him a guitar, and advised him the best thing you could do is turn it up loud as it would go. This he did in February 1970, when he, Dusty Hill, Frank Beard, formed ZZ Top, a blues rock bar band. They play 12-bar boogie with a dynamic rhythm section on top of which Gibbons lays witty, sharp guitar lines that sound deceptively simple. Mostly, though, it was the attitude that broke ZZ Top out of Texas. Mindless, sexual, irreverent, beer-drinking music is what they specialized in. That style meets its pinnacle with LaGrange from Tres Hombres. The track became a teenage boy classic, and its riff is as powerful as a Chuck Berry riff. The album features other classics such as Waiting for the Bus and Jesus Just Left Chicago, Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers, and Hot, Blue and Righteous. "We're still attempting to qualify as interpreters," said Gibbons of the band's blues roots, "which is a pastor I can rest comfortably within, because fortunately there are still plenty of living exponents who qualify as originators. We are at a place in time, it shouldn't even be called history, where we can still expose ourselves to those kinds of resources. And if one is really willing to understand it, then maybe the original attitude, the original intention can be embraced. And I think, without meaning to sound too I know it all, that so far we've been pretty successful." This is ZZ Top with LaGrange.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town about the shack outside the games. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls. I'm
ZZ Top with, well, I couldn't work out by reading it whether it was Lagrange or Lagrange, but upon listening to the lyrics quite carefully, I can report back to you that it is Lagrange. Though personally, I would have had more luck in recognizing it if Toby Creswell had written, oh, you know, the one that goes, da, 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 da. But I appreciate that that is somewhat hard to put in writing. He could have included the guitar tab, but then again, that might have breached some sort of copyright law. And we don't want that to happen here at Waiheke Radio 107.4 and 88.3 FM. Next up, we've got The Clash with London Calling. You couldn't have a better war cry, or a more accurate one. On this magnificent double album, The Clash landed their third Great British Invasion. There was subterfuge. The album covers rips off Elvis Presley's first LP, but mostly it was sheer force, and nowhere was that more evident than on this, the opening track. London Calling is a call to arms, to resist oppression, to resist drugs, and to supply the to confront the apathy and materialism and the mostly nostalgic state of pop culture. The riff is taken from the BBC World Service call sign. It's a song that takes on the terror of nuclear war, which was then a possibility in 1979, and thumbs its nose. For the past 4 years, punk rockers in London had been saying the same thing, preaching too loudly there to the converted. London Calling reached out beyond that ghetto. London Calling had none of the amateurish noise of punk rock. Strummer was here shaking off the pretensions of London at the time and acknowledging the fact that the music of his heart was part Woody Guthrie and part pub rock. His lyrics and vocals then came into sharper focus. Fortunately, he had Mick Jones and Paul Simonon to lift the music out of his limitations. The sound is a hybrid of roots rock and dub, but there is nothing here to get in the way of that message. Simonon's deep, rich bass punctuates the marching beat kept by Jones and Strummer's guitars, which sound like weapons rather than instruments. By the third verse, London Calling was a firefight. Jones said of the sessions that producer Guy Stevens was exhorting us to make it move, or to increase the tensity, or to lay the energy on. And they succeeded in increasing the intensity and laying the energy on with The Clash and London Calling.
Thing. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going thin. Engines stop running, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning. I live by the river, to the imitation zone. Forget it, brother, you can go in alone. London calling to the zombies of death. Quit holding out, draw another breath. London calling, and I don't wanna shout, but while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling, see we ain't got no hide, except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in, engines stuck on him, the wheat is going thin, a nuclear error. But I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning.
Ha ha ha! some of it was true. Rumbling, calling at the top of the dial. And after all this, won't you give me a smile? I never felt so much alike.
The Clash with London Calling here on Waiheke Radio, where you are listening to 1001 Songs and what is unfortunately to be the last episode of 1001 Songs for a little while here on Waiheke Radio, 107.4 and 88.3. Next up, we got Boogie Chillin' by John Lee Hooker. Like the Zen monks who comb their pebble gardens the same way day after day, John Lee Hooker combs his blues groove, getting ever so slightly closer to the ineffable each time. His signature line was the growling mystical phrase, "How, how, how, how." I thought I'd just read it as it was written, for effect. In fact, no, it's got question marks after it, so it's more, "How? How? How? How?" But I might go beyond that. I'm getting excited now. I might go on beyond that. Open quote marks. How? Question mark. Space. How? Question mark. Space. How? Question mark. Space. How? Question mark. Space. Close quotation marks. He said, "It's best on the Talking Blues track, Teaching the Blues. There's not a lot of chords in it, just a big beat. Your fancy cards don't mean nothing if you ain't got that beat. Throw those fancy cards away and just get this slow beat." John Lee Hooker was born in 1917 at Ground Zero of the Blues, Clarksdale, Mississippi. His stepfather, Will Moore, was by some accounts one of the pioneering blues players in the Delta at the time. "I was living with my mother and her husband," Hooker said to Judah Bauer of the John Spencer Blues Explosion. "He was a guitar player. What I'm playing now, and that's what he taught me to play, his style. I played the guitar like his, A Stella. I always watched the tunings, open A, regular tunings. Played them in all keys. When I'm playing Boogie Chillin', and that's an open A, I heard my stepdaddy doing something like that. But he didn't call it Boogie Chillin', he just played it." Writer John Lee Hooker said, "There's only one song which goes either slow or really slow. He is the Zen master." Hooker left the Delta for Detroit. He became a janitor. He was eventually discovered playing house parties and given a recording deal with Modern. Hooker hit out one out of the park with his first track, Boogie Chillin', and that set the template, heavily syncopated guitar that just sits in a groove while John Lee growls over the top. The boogie music was closer to rock and roll than blues. It had pronounced the beats of harmonially pumped white music. It's impossible to hear Hooker and not move your hips. Boogie Chillin' could even be an anthem for the 60s youth quake with its lyrics about doing what mama don't allow. Precisely that reason is for which John Lee Hooker was a particular favourite with the young British bands of the early 60s, notably the Animals, who had a hit with Boom Boom. He was an inspiration to all British R&B players. White American kids caught on to his style as well, and both Canned Heat and ZZ Top, who you've just heard from about 15 minutes ago, made careers of essentially recycling Hooker's boogie. And this is John Lee Hooker with Boogie Chillin'.
In the town, people, I was walking down Hazen Street. Everybody was talking about Henry Swanclaw. I decided I'd drop in there that night. When I got there, I said, yeah, people, they was really having a ball. Yes, I know. Boogie Chiller. One night I was laying down. I heard Mom and Papa talking. I heard Papa tell Mama, let that boy boogie woogie. It's in him, and he got to come out. And I felt so good. Went on boogie just the same.
John Lee Hooker there with Boogie Chillin', right here on Waiheke Radio, where you've got 1001 songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. Here with Pink Floyd and Shine On, You Crazy Diamond, from 1975. Pink Floyd's best track was an elegy to founder Syd Barrett, who went insane shortly after the release of their first album in 1968. On the whole, though, I think the album sprang from that one four-note guitar phrase of Dave's in Shine On, the keyboard player Rick Wright told Mojo. We heard it and went, that's a really nice phrase. The wine came out, and that led to what I think is our best album, the most colourful, the most feelingful. Wright recalled being in the studio as the track was finished and meeting a dissociated Syd, now a shadow of his former self. Dave Gilmour's melancholy guitar part was developed into a lengthy portrait of Syd, the manic and the tragic sides of his personality. The song also reflected the mixed feelings of Waters about having continued so long in his shadow. The song had been worked up in concert, and at Waters' suggestion, the final 25-minute studio version is split into two parts, opening and closing Floyd's only listenable album of the 1970s. And this is Pink Floyd with Shine On, You Crazy Diamond. Pink Floyd with Shine On, You Crazy Diamond. Now, that brings us to the conclusion of another 1001 songs, which will unfortunately be the final episode for a number of weeks. However, never fear, for I will be here in spirit and in a digital recording. Repeats of my show will play on Saturday afternoons at 2 o'clock, and they might also play on Mondays at 8 p.m. But then again, we might have a little surprise for that slot in the coming weeks here at Waiheke Radio. Nevertheless, right now, I shall leave you